So this afternoon, I want to talk about well, you'll see what I'll talk about, but there's the aspect of self-reflection, the aspect of here being where all the riches are in life, where the happiness is to be found, not out there, not in all the things that we think will do it. That's called barking up the wrong tree. And we've been endlessly, and we still continue barking up all these wrong trees, thinking that they will do what we want. And it can't. Life is never going to be the way we want it to be. If we were God, maybe we would have made it different. But the Buddha actually said that this realm where we live, full of its ups and downs and challenges and beauty and all, is the perfect realm for awakening. Because if it were all beautiful, i.e. the heavenly realms, which may or may not exist. In fact, maybe they're just in people's minds, but they're called the heavenly realms, where things are wonderful. Beings in the states of wonder of the heavenly realms never wake up beyond whatever state they're in, because there's no reason to, there's no urgency, there's no kicking in the pants, there's no desperation, there's no hunger for anything better to try. You can just cruise and drift. For apparently people aren't reborn for 400 years at a time. I don't know. Who's to say? And the hell realms, meaning when we're afflicted and life's difficult, is really hard to wake up, because you're just on survival mode and coping and, you know, desperation and self-preservation and all of that. Whereas the realm we get to live in, meaning the typical state for the average person, not all people at all times, some places are the hell realms on earth right now. If you were buried in that hotel underneath an avalanche, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't just the average condition. But nevertheless, typically, on the whole, we have just enough pleasure to give ourselves joy and delight and happiness and lightness, and just enough pain to keep us wanting to wake up a bit more and deal with it and learn. How many people came to the Dharma, started really looking, because of some kind of pain? Hafiz is my favorite poet. Well, one of my favorite poets, but he's from Persia, about 100 years before Rumi, says, first the fish has to say, something ain't right about this camel ride, and why am I so damn thirsty? First, we have to have some degree of dissatisfaction, most of us, before we start asking the questions like, something isn't wrong, isn't there some other way? That's why we come to meditation, because that way those trees we've been barking up don't really do it. So we know that there's got to be some other way of doing it. So what happens as we meditate, we practice, is we start seeing that it's the internal, that's what's going on inside me, that's about my happiness or unhappiness. It's not these changing conditions, of which that sometimes will be lovely and sometimes will be medium and sometimes will be, you know, horrible and hard, the peaks and valleys. Before we do this self-reflection, this starting questioning what's going on inside, we're happy when we're up and we're unhappy when we're down, and we believe we should be endlessly up when we think there should be nothing but peaks. And that's completely ridiculous. If you never had a valley, you wouldn't even recognize the peak, for one thing. And it's impossible for it not to be this way for all of us. You know, we're all going to get sick. We're all going to have, you know, loss. The Buddha called these the eight vicissitudes. Many of you have heard of these things. Or Zen people talk about this 10,000 joys, the 10,000 sorrows of being a human being. That's the fact of it. So let's just not pretend and wish that we had 10,000 joys, period. Let's, you know, wish for the heavenly realms and not wake up. But that's not what we have. So how we can be and accommodate what's happening, rather than wish for it to be only four of the eight vicissitudes, is to become self-reflective and to watch and learn about how I am causing my distress by the way I'm responding to these peaks and valleys, these joys and sorrows. And that's where I can't do something about it. I can't do anything about the fact that life goes up and down and accidents happen and people are the way they are and do and say the things they say and my body does what it does. And I'm not in control of most of that. But I can learn to master my own mind, and then the way I respond to and deal with what happens is, in fact, something I can mitigate to some degree and train and And then some of the results will happen as I was describing them this morning, as many of you already experience. So, self-reflection. O longing mind, dwell within the depth of your own pure nature. Do not seek your home elsewhere. Your naked awareness alone, O mind, is the inexhaustible abundance for which you long so desperately. Ramakrishna. You don't have to be a Buddhist for this to apply to you. Wu Wei Wu, I don't know if any of you know who it is, or ironic, it's a Westerner. We're so habituated to looking away from ourselves constantly. It's this looking away that creates the very emptiness we're trying to fill by looking away. Thich Nhat Hanh, we've lost our taste for silence. He wrote this like 25 years ago, 30 years ago. This is before the cell phone epidemic. We've lost our taste for silence. We don't know how to be with ourselves without something else to accompany us, a book, a telephone, a TV. We've lost our taste for being alone. So the first thing for us to do is to return to ourselves in order to recover ourselves to be our best. We need to reorganize our daily lives so that we do not allow society to colonize us. Truer and truer every passing week. Einstein, you know Einstein, brilliant as he was also wise. He had some really deep understandings of things. He said, for instance, the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It's the source of all art and science. He, I would say, and she, to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. Wonder. Wonder is only possible with time and with slowness, without being colonized. Luang Po, I mean, they all say the same thing, of course. It's the same spiritual message. Chinese philosopher. The pure mind shines forever with the radiance of its own perfection. This mind is the Buddha. That's what it means. It's an awakened state. And there is no distinction between a Buddha and ordinary beings, except that ordinary beings, meaning the ordinary state of mind, ordinary beings are attached to forms and thus seek for Buddhahood outside themselves. By this very seeking, they lose it. It's exactly the same words. And these people weren't in touch with each other. They didn't Google each other and send emails and... Hundreds of years apart, thousands of miles. Jung, your vision will become clear only when you look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakens. In case you're doubting what I'm saying. And then also Einstein said this, and this is very encouraging, I think. I'll tell you why I think it's encouraging after I read it. Any intelligent fool, they do exist, intelligent fools. Any intelligent fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. There's lots of them in our world. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. So we have the genius to know that we're fishes who say there's something ain't right about this complex world becoming increasingly violent. And it takes a lot of courage. And the word courage I love, because courage is from that French word cœur, which is heart. It takes a lot of caring, a lot of heartfulness, which is a lot of vulnerability and sometimes pain to move in the opposite direction. It isn't, you know, all fun and games to move against the society that we have and this mind that's being increasingly puppy-ish and puppified. That's a nice word. I made that up. So we need a lot of courage. We need a lot of heartfulness, caring to move in the opposite direction. But that's really what we're doing. So we want to be able to look here and watch what's going on inside. And some of what's going on inside is fascinating. Some of what's going on inside is sweet. Some of what's going on inside is embarrassing. Some of what's going on inside is painful and scary. Wounds, for instance, you know, bad habits, history, our stories. And so we have this, we don't want to look inside, lots of it. If we could just see the beauty inside, then we would all do it. Great, that's easy peasy. But if we, you know, have to see the parts of us that are ridiculous, or the parts of that are, you know, kidding ourselves endlessly, just telling ridiculous stories or wasting our time or imagining things which would never happen. And, I mean, so much. Have you been noticing what's going on inside? Even though I just say to you, be with your breath, anchor yourself in your body, it's very simple instructions, the meditation instructions. What you actually encounter in there is a lot of your own stuff. It's all, you know, what's going on in your head as well. How hard it is to simply just keep being with your ribcage expanding. It sounds so simple. It's all your other stuff, all your memories, all your worries, all your concerns, all your dramas, all your attachment to having it be a certain way, all your complaints about everything. Yeah? That's what's in there. And when it's unpleasant in there, or embarrassing, or whatever it may be, slightly shameful, or we blame ourselves, and then we're mean to ourselves, and then we're frustrated with ourselves. And when what we see is something pleasant, we're proud of ourselves, and we're inflated, and we think we're great. And it isn't just that we see things, we then make something of them. We proliferate around what we see everywhere. I mean, we do it with everything. Yeah? I'm speaking about you, yeah? It's how it works in there. The thing about it is it's the same. And what the mechanism is, one way of seeing it, is that there is there's our experience, our sense doors receiving impressions and sounds and people doing and saying things. And then we get the impressions, and then they have a flavor to them, and then they evoke a kind of response, you know, oh, I like that one, or oh, I don't like that. Kind of, you know, so it has then a flavor that we... It becomes evoked, which can grow into from just kind of background states to being full-blown emotions, you know, moods, emotions, which tend, and these can come in any order, and it's all happening all the time anyway, that we start having thoughts. So we have this busy thinking part of our mind that's actually trying to cope with and make sense of and deal with all the impressions, all the things that are happening. And when they're pleasant, how it tries to cope with them is get them, get more of them, experience them. Ooh, I like that. I want one. Where did you get that? You know, what's the email address? I want to be able to, you know, have more of that experience. And when it's unpleasant, it's even busier trying to get rid of what's unpleasant and blame people for it and stop them from doing it. And how could they be this way? And so on and so on, right? I mean, you all know how we do that. But it's the busyness of that thinking, triggered by the experience that we're having, inflated by the fact that it feels like something in our emotions. So we get into this, what's called entangled. So an entangled state is when something's happened to us that's, you know, arisen inside, a thought, a memory, or something's occurred to us from the outside. And it has stimulated either particularly pleasant or particularly unpleasant feelings, which then have triggered a whole lot of thinking, which we are now involved with, and we don't realize it. We're just caught in this spin, and that's what we mean entangled or triggered. We have, all of us, got this big, wide, wise, quiet awareness. But when we're caught in something or other, we're in the grip of it, we're overwhelmed by it, we're consumed by desire, or we're in the grip of fear, or we're carried away by emotion, or whatever the English language describes, into the thing, whatever the thing is, we're lost in it. And awareness doesn't realize it. What we're wanting is to have awareness, realize I'm getting worried, I'm getting upset, I'm frightened here, this fear happening. If awareness is functional, accessible, we won't get so consumed in whatever the thing is. It's protecting us, it sort of anchors us back in present awareness. But if we don't have access to it, or we don't have access to it easily, and we lose access, the more dramatic whatever the scenario is that's happening, then we're at the mercy of being consumed. And we get consumed. When we're consumed, we're consumed. It's not the end of the world to be consumed, but from that place, we're not seeing clearly. We're in a very narrow, tight little mess. And so whatever we think or say or do from that state won't be particularly wise, because it won't have enough information, it won't have enough space to know that there's another person on the other end of the conversation who's got feelings and needs, and we won't be able, we're just consumed. So we need present awareness to function, to help us see the bigger picture, to see what's happening. I know a lot of you know this, but nevertheless, I think we can probably hear it until we never lose touch of our awareness ever again. The problem is, the little busy mind is utterly convincing. And it thinks that its way of solving problems and figuring things out and blaming people is going to help. It's trying to help. Its intentions are to be helpful. We're using that part to try and help ourselves. But unfortunately, it doesn't help a lot of the time. It makes things worse. Gets us even more entangled. It's wisdom. It's the big, quiet, I've used the word recently a lot, shy part. Our quality parts of ourselves, our nobility, is shy. Thomas Merton used that word. And once I read that, I thought, that's really clever. The wise parts, they're like beautiful, you know, deer or something. And they only come out carefully. Whereas if we're busy loudly being like a bunch of children running around or puppies, they don't get noticed. They get overshadowed, outshouted by all this activity, all this excited, oh my God, drama. And so it's not that we aren't wise, it's just that wisdom sort of keeps being ignored in a way. So we need to grow it. And we use retreat time where we're not being quite so inundated by stuff and people and responsibilities and arguments and family members and all the things, you know. We have a little retreat from all of that, so we have a bit of a more likely chance to be able to access this quiet awareness that's going on. It's always there. We need to grow our neural pathways with it, establish it more and more. It's not convincing because it's subtle. It's not dominant because it's shy. The other seems to be much more useful and meaningful until we begin to realize that there's got to be a better way. So this awareness of ours, this wisdom of ours, this capacity to see clearly, it's less than all the thinking. It's quieter than all the thinking. It's more subtle than all the thinking. It's more profound than all. And because it's so subtle and so shy and so less than all the busy stuff, it gets overlooked, is all. We don't believe that the big, beautiful satisfaction that we're all seeking and that we need, those leisure moments, the peace, is so available. We think we have to get over a whole lot of obstacles and works and learning and understanding to get to it. It's somehow a little bit just beyond the next few more retreats and another, you know, whatever, I need a bit of this and more of that and write this down and make sure I've, you know, read enough suttas and gone on and off in many, many long retreats and all of these things. We're waiting for all these things to sort of get it together somehow to be fully, this is it. This isn't quite it, not quite yet. Is this it for anybody right here, sitting here, right now? Is this it? Have we arrived? Do we think we'll get it later, after something else, and more? It's all just a way of perceiving. We think that something else, somewhere else, it's kind of funny, and it's kind of ridiculous, and it's kind of sad. This is it, actually. There isn't anything else. Sorry. This is as good as it's ever going to be. Just sitting here, just being here. This is your life. And there's only ever this. There never was anything else. It was all imaginary. And it was all hope. And we're always ahead of just, you know, around the next corner. my corner is always to the left for some reason, and there's trees before I can get it because I can't quite see what's around the corner. It stopped being a corner anymore. It was, you know, but I remember I'm very visual. My mind has always got pictures. Everything I'm thinking and saying has got picture form, shapes, everything. The days of the week are floating in space in a shape, everything. Which is why I can't remember names, because I just see letters. So Marianne and, you know, Marilyn, all very confusing for me because this is the letters. Anyway, my visual was going down a road, country lane in England, needless to say, which is where I grew up, and then around this bend to the left behind these trees, and I was about to get there, and then I'd get there, and then, oh, I still had to go around another bend and endlessly going around this bend to the left. It's faded away in these years, I have to say. This is it. It's here. There's no bends in the road. There's nowhere to go. We want to just come back and be fully here, right, this second, with this heart, with how it feels right now. It just, we don't believe it. We can't believe this is enough. But those beautiful things I talked about this morning, you know, those states of when we feel balanced and we're able to just go with the flow of what's happening, or things happen and we have this much deeper way of being able to understand all the matrix and why it was that way. Those things only happen when we're present. None of that's available to any of us when we're looking ahead, planning, worrying, blaming. It doesn't happen because we're not actually in touch with our wisdom. Our wise self is only ever present. It's the busy little mind that takes us away from presence, takes us into the future, into the imaginary realms, into the past, into reviewing, rerunning, rehearsing. It takes us away from just being. Present awareness is just being. We really believe doing, and doing more and getting more and later and all, you know. It's in the way. Thomas Merton, I love Thomas Merton. Silly thing to say, I've never met Thomas Merton, but I do like his writings. I look like apparently his mind. He says, the greatest need of our time, and again, this is from 40, 50 years ago, he probably wrote this, so must be greater now. The greatest need of our time is to clean out the enormous mass of mental and emotional rubbish that clutters our minds. You like that, John? I like that too. So how do you clean out the rubbish, is the question. How does meditation clean out the rubbish in the mind, all that clutter? One simple answer is to stop engaging it. Is to not spend your time sitting there telling stories, making comments, running the narrative, wondering, if only-ing, hoping. Because that just does more and more of the same. We're very good at that, and we need a certain amount of that to live our lives in a practical way. But we want to disengage from that. We want to engage with something much less. Just this moment's direct experience. There's breath coming in and out of your nostrils right now. Your stomachs are full of lunch. They're probably gurgling. It's not cold in this room. It's not hot either. It's very simple stuff. We're bored by that. We want drama. We think, you know, stimulus and nirvana is this great big loud bells. I don't know what we think it is, but we think it's definitely not this. Nirvana, freedom, awakened states, is simply the absence of clutter. It isn't something. It isn't something to get anywhere, and certainly not in the future. It's simply being in a state where there's complete ease and peace and well-being and consciousness, and nothing to worry about or to do or to get. That's all it is. It's so available that it's so subtle and it's so immediate and it's so shy that we're looking ahead of it. That's what I mean by overlooking, overdoing. We have moments of freedom all day long. And they're the in-between moments between the dramas where we're all excited about getting something and hanging on to something or getting rid of the problems or struggling with the problems. In between those moments, there are many, 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 many moments in your life where
It's just being. Nothing to worry about. No job, no project. Is there a spare seat? Hello? Is there a seat somewhere? Does anybody see it? You found one? All right, that was quick. But we overlook them, we just dismiss them, we think that somehow perfection or the ultimate satisfaction is bigger, is grander, is holier or something, it's something other. Freedom from struggle is the only thing the Buddha taught, just freedom from struggling, which is wanting, planning, getting, trying, fixing, complaining, whining, all of that. Freedom, when that just calms down and goes quiet, we have a moment of complete well-being. Can that be enough? Is that enough? Once it starts to become enough, we relax. Because that other is busy, is like so exhausting. Barking. Running around as a puppy, you know. It's exhausting. We can just let things be as they are. We're not going to like them all. And we can be proactive about things. You know, when something's happening that's unpleasant or causing pain or whatever it is, we can choose to step the other way. It's not that we're going to stop doing anything, but we aren't run by this desperate need, having to improve. We can be proactive, not reactive. This is a huge difference. Proactive means we're alive, we function, we make choices, we do things. Which is going to be more so. Reactive is the things that are happening are making us hate this and worry about that and do all that other neurotic behavior. And we don't mean to, we just think that that's the way to be and that's the way we've always done it. But it isn't helpful and it's exhausting. It's sort of helpful. If it were completely useless, we wouldn't do it at all. But it is sort of useful, but it's only so much useful. It's not deeply helpful. Doesn't bring deep well-being, it brings superficial comfort. So we stop engaging all of this neurotic scheming, planning, judging, all the stuff that you were doing all morning that you kept noticing, that keeps you from being able to just sit and be with your breath. Anybody sit and be with their breath all morning with no neurosis? Right, that stuff. That's what we mean by clutter. All of that stuff fills us up. Leave it alone. Let your mind do it. It's your mind busily trying to help you. You say, thanks very much, little mind, for helping. Thank you. It's okay, though. We've got it covered. Anything thrives with attention. Anything withers with inattention. Puppies, children, plants. Give attention to your wisdom, to your shy, quiet, I see what's happening, this is what's happening, that part of your mind. Withdraw attention from that kind of part. It's going to do it, but you don't have to give so much attention to it. That's like giving it infusions, you know. Withdraw permission from that. It's going to do it. Tolerate it, but don't give it so much attention. It's like when a child is behaving in a way that's loud and irritating, you don't want to keep on, you know, just like leave them alone and they'll wind down. If they don't get responses, it'll eventually wither. Same thing goes on in these circuits of our brain. You know, when we put more energy there, it just gets deeper and more of a deeper groove. When we withdraw energy from it, attention, it's there. It's a habit. It's going to happen. You're going to judge yourself. I'm going to complain about North American drivers. I've never stopped complaining about. It's only been 50 years I've lived here. I still like, go to England and learn how to drive. I say it every day. Look in the mirror. Don't they teach you how to drive here? I said it this morning. Partly because I like to drive fast and it irritates me that people don't look at them and know that I'm behind them trying to overtake, but I'm kind of kidding, exaggerating it. But you're still going to have your habits. But the thing is, if you don't give them a lot of attention, you don't identify with it, then it's going to wither. It's going to become just this little silly little na-na-na-na-na-na going on. Can't stop it. We're not trying to switch something off and be something different. It's where we place our attention. Place your attention in the present moment, in how it feels in your direct experience in this present moment. Your lungs moving, if you're feeling sad, be present with that and feel that.
If you're irritated by the person sitting beside you who's breathing heavily, feel the irritation. Be there with that feeling. Bring your attention right here with your direct experience quietly. So I have a new mnemonic for mindfulness. This is mindfulness I'm describing, by the way. For those of you who aren't sure what mindfulness is, it just means this, present and aware. My latest mnemonic is fish. It's maybe a year old, so some of you have probably heard it, but anyway. So it's F for friendly. All of this has to be done in a friendly way. If we're not friendly, we're then critical. You know, we're bossy in some way, or we're dismissive and not engaged or too engaged or something. Friendly, you know, when you're with a friend, be friendly means you care, you're interested, you respect that person. You're not going to tell them how to be. You're not like directing them. You're not improving them. You know, you may have responses, but you're not like wishing they were different. They're your friend. You're there for them. You have space for them. You really hear them. If they want to say something, you don't shut them up and talk over them. You actually wait for them to tell you what they're going to say. That's friendly. There's a warmth. So the first of my, there has to be warmth with this process, with your own inner puppies. You know, you have to be friendly with these puppies. We don't want to just like smush them or shut them in a box somewhere. It's like, let me just give them some of my attention here. Friendly. Second one is interest. Interest is, as I talked about this morning, is that sense of what's actually going on in here? Curiosity. But it isn't the kind of interest or curiosity that's going to get busy trying to figure things out. It's not that much work. It's more like innocent, fresh, the way children, I'm using children, I must have a 3.5-year-old granddaughter, who kind of go like, why? But they don't want you to answer them. They're just interested. They're just like, why is that? Why is that? Wow, look at that. Why? That kind of wonder. Engaged, bright, curious, but not having to figure out and get information. We're not going to try and solve problems here. We're not becoming clever here. We just want to know what's going on. That kind of interest. So friendly, interest. S. I put a double S, actually. Softly staying. It's actually staying. But it has to be this light, soft staying, as I was talking about this morning. It's not staying like stay put, don't you dare move, you know, which I used to do for probably the first 15 or 20 years of my Vipassana practice. I was like, so, I worked so hard and tried so hard. And I was a very good student. It was later on I had to relax with it, you know, and the teacher was able to sort of say, relax, relax. I didn't trust myself, so I worked really hard, you know. I didn't trust that my mind could actually stay if I didn't nail it to the floor, you know. So softly staying, staying. So friendly interest, softly staying. And then the last part of fish is shh. Shh, 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 shh. So really want the shh this afternoon. As you practice, you don't have to make comments, you don't have to make opinion, you don't have to say, oh, you're never going to get this right, oh, how dare you, why are they doing that, da, 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 da. We're just going to withdraw permission from all the comments, all the opinions, all the stories, all the, you know, all of that. Just shh, 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 shh. Friendly interest and softly stay. Shh. And I that's fun for me at the moment. I like my mind. I like exploring. I like meditating. I want you to like it too. I want you to enjoy it. I want you to do it because it's fascinating and unbelievably, more than anything, it's not just helpful. It's the way to be happy. It's the way. I don't know. There are maybe other ways that I don't know about. This way I know works. So it has to be done for it to be sustainable in a way that's pleasurable, that's interesting, that's fun even, that's your own way. You have to explore. What's going on in there? What's helping? What does this do? It's your own experience. It's your own life. It's your own mind. It's your own storytelling. It's your own neurosis. It's your own wounds. It's your own results. Engage yourself with it. Explore. What's it like? What's it like when you walk and go up and down on your toes or stop and balance on one foot? What's that like? What's it like with your breathing? What else are you noticing? What's it like when you're judging yourself? What's that feel like? What does that feel like in your... Does that constrict your throat? Does it feel like somebody's pressing a rock on your heart? What's that like? What's it like to be thankful and grateful and count blessings? Can you feel that lifting up? What's that like? Isn't that lovely? And when you're down on yourself, what's that like? That's like really a drag. What's that like? In the immediate experience, not why, not justifying, just this experience, this moment right here. What's the quality of my moment? Because this is your only moment. This is it. This is it. Okay, everybody say it. This is it. How is it? Slightly sleepy, slightly comfy, slightly entertaining, slightly boring, I don't know. Inside myself, how is it? And always be wanting to know, what is it like now? What is it like now? It's not what I am I doing it right or wrong? You can't meditate right. We can't meditate wrong. You can't be a good meditator, a bad meditator. You're just being with yourself. Meditation is middle standing. That's what it means. Medi, middle, station, like a train in a station, standing. Standing in the middle of your life, meaning right here. This is it. That's what it means. And here and here and here and still always here. And what's it like here? And is this leading to well-being? Buddha's whole teaching was about leading to the pure, the sure heart's release. Is my heart released? Is the state inside me a sense of expansion and delight and connection and vitality and really engagement? Or is it disconnected? Is it whining? Is it barking up weird trees? Like, what's it doing? Ahead of itself always? What's it like in here? Not right or wrong, but what is it like? What am I doing? How am I responding right now? Am I creating more well-being for myself or am I beating myself up? What am I doing? That's all. Without the ability to meditate, which means stay present and look inside with friendliness, with interest, and stay keeping doing it quietly, you won't know what it's like in here. You're busy looking out there and ahead of yourself. You won't know and see then, and you won't learn how you are making your own well-being or your own distress. You won't see it. But you will see it if you do that. So we meditate. We keep encouraging those puppies to just come here, like just have some little interest, look inside, what's going on inside. Off they go to some drama, off they go to tomorrow, off they go to some hurt that happened when that person insulted you. Okay, let's just be here because it's in here now. Come on in here. What's this like now? And you can be having your memories. You're not going to stop your memories coming, but then take whatever happens then and say, what's that like now? When I think of that then, it feels like this now. What's that like now? And if it's tensing, basically we learn not by how we're taught, interestingly enough. We learn by our own experience. We learn by whether we're struggling or not struggling. We learn basically trial and error, mostly from the error part. We judge, we think that will be helpful, we look and we feel what that's like, and wasn't helpful, so we learn, oh, that wasn't so helpful. That just made me feel alienated, and made me feel uptight, and made my heart get constricted, and got me into a whole bunch of planning, that wasn't so skillful. How about some understanding? We try something else, we like, if I just stay quietly, and in this conversation that I remember having that was painful for me, I just stay with what that feeling like. And then I'll realize that that person was tired. Then when I understand that person, oh, they were tired. That's all that was going on. I made a whole drama and thought that they were being really insulting and should have respected my seniority and da, da, da. And all that happened was that they were tired. And I didn't even notice that because I was so busy reacting. For example, you're not trying to make all that happen. You're just quietly fishing, sitting here, friendly, interested in how it is for you in here. And understandings dawn. This is called insight meditation. When you're meditating this way, present awareness in your own experience, insights pop up, meaning you understand things. Without the processing of figuring out, it's not the left hemisphere. This means left hemisphere activity, by the way. When I do that, and this means right hemisphere. non-activity. Shh. That's what I'm. It's the way I see it because of my visual thing. So, to go quiet, to help with the shh for the afternoon, what I recommend is, if you want, I don't know if I want you to be too busy. The difficulty is I teach the 60 of you here. Some of you are brand new meditators. Some of you are 40-year meditators. Some of you have a lot of understanding of the teaching. Some of you have very little. It's an enormous range, so you don't all have to get everything I say, and it doesn't have to all be the right thing for you. Some of you have heard it many times before, many different people, different ways. That's a caveat. I'm just offering whatever I can offer. Take what's useful for you and apply it in whatever way you like. Can't do it wrong. No mistakes. What I'm going to suggest is, in order to help with this quieting, the shh part of fish, you want to do all of them, friendly, interest, softly, stay, but particularly shh today, is let your attention pick up and reveal to you things that you would normally ignore. Don't just have your attention go to the beautiful drops of whatever you find beautiful, or that piece of dog shit that shouldn't be there, or whatever, the things that irritate you, which will trigger, more likely, entanglement in ways of wanting and having. And I wonder if she'll notice if I get out my phone and take a photograph of that raindrop, you know, because she said don't use it. Or that's entanglement, by the way, that's samsaraing. Or, you know, that something wrong with that person or that whatever. Notice instead simple things. The simpler things are the in-between the pleasant and the unpleasant things. Those of you who know the teaching on Vedana means what we call neutral. I don't like that word neutral. It makes me think of beige, but it means the less... I'm wearing beige. You know what I mean by like... that kind of thing. So, but the kind of stuff that would mostly we would just dismiss from, we wouldn't bother with. Because that... material, of which there's a huge amount, like the floor here, for instance. I don't actually like the part of all of the crumbs on the floor, and I should, from here I can see it needs washing. I'm just being silly about the floor. Let me just notice something like the floor, because then when I turn my attention inside myself, it's not going to get all entangled in anything. It's just floor. In fact, it's kind of sweet because the people here have put tape all over the place so that we can have space to walk around. How brilliant is that? And how thoughtful. Just be simple. Don't look at the things you love or the things you hate, because in that way, you'll have less probability of your mind getting busy and entangled and chattering. It will be quieter because it's just a floor. It's just grass. You'll still find your mind commenting on the grass. It's, you know, when did they last mow the grass? They better hurry up and mow the grass. It's a warm day for January. Who knows what your mind will do? Watch the mind. But let yourself be attending to, if your mind is going to go anywhere, which it will, to the simpler things. This is your retreat. You can. It's, you know, it's not shopping. It's not advertising. It's not noisy neighbors. It's not family members who are all loaded around you. It's just grass. And you'll see yourself just be able to be quiet inside. You know, it's just twigs, leaves on the ground. See if you can help your mind be quiet for this afternoon. Don't worry if it won't be, it won't be. But disengage from the stories, the dramas, the comments, the, you know, endless narrative. And just be with the simplicity of walking out there, breathing. It's not hot air, cold air. It's not remarkable air. It's just perfectly benign air. Okay. And if you have in your sitting, if you have pain in your body, then try and give it some space and spend a fair amount of time noticing the rest of your body, which is not remarkable. You know, the part that's just sitting there, that's fine. Don't get all caught up in the part that's aching or something, because then you'll be triggered into getting entangled. See what I'm saying? We can choose where to focus ourselves, where to give our attention and where to withdraw. So withdraw from the loaded stuff and instead allow your senses to receive the stuff that we would mostly ignore. Give yourself a break. Let your mind become quieter. So there's your afternoon instruction.